Jo, klar ho all. Atlok wel chillal. Atlok ish pawatsum. Today is the 8th of May, 2021. This is the second meeting of Linguistics 181. Today is a study only day, but we will be doing a quick review of handouts 1 through 3. And we will be starting over again at the beginning of handout 1 at our next class. You should all see the top of handout 1. These notes are structured in the following way. At the beginning of every handout is a series of technical terms which are defined. There are only two technical terms defined on this handout. They are anthropology and linguistics. Then there's a series of notes, and sometimes there are exercises which you can do to check to make sure that you've understood what you've read. Let's talk about anthropology. Anthropology is the study of human beings. It is a very broad study because human beings are complex, interesting creatures. Linguistics is the study of human language. Human language is only one aspect of human behavior. Anthropology has to do with human bodies, the evolution of human beings, their culture, and their language. Linguistics, their language, is only one of those aspects. But one of the interesting things about the study of linguistics is that the more we've looked at it, the more we've learned that it is far more complex than we expected at first. What we will be talking about in this course is linguistics. The main purpose of this handout is just to help you appreciate that. Although linguistics is only one aspect of human behavior, it is such a complex aspect of human behavior that it deserves its own science. One way of appreciating this is the observation that even though linguistics as a science is 200 or 300 years old, we still have not described completely the grammar of any human language, even English. Which may be the best studied human language, has not been fully described, and there are still many things for us to learn about it. In this course, of course, we will be mostly interested in English, sorry, in Nuchanoth, not in English, but in Nuchanoth. However, since English is the language that we all share, we will often be comparing Nuchanoth and English during this course. I'm going to skip pretty fast over the first page of handout 1 because this has to do with the history of the science of linguistics, which I find very interesting, but is only of very small interest for this particular course. Something that is very important, though, is that you have some understanding of these subfields of grammar. So you'll see this in numbered example 1. The main parts of grammar are phonology, morphology, syntax, and semantics. If you do any work in grammar, it will help you to understand the difference amongst these subfields. Let's start with phonology. Phonology is the study of speech sounds. For example, one of the simplest observations we can make about Nuchanoth is that it has about 45 sounds. English has about 36 sounds. So Nuchanoth has more sounds than English. English is pretty average amongst human languages in the number of sounds it has. At the lower end, we find languages like Hawaiian, which have as few as 15 sounds. That's about how many sounds Hawaiian has. 10 consonants and 5 vowels. English is in the average range, 24 consonants and about 12 vowels. Nuchanoth is towards the upper range. Nuchanoth has 35 consonants and 8 to 10 vowels. The second subfield we'll be interested in is morphology. Morphology has to do with the structure of words. All of you know enough about English and Nuchanoth to have noticed that English tends to have long sentences with short words, whereas Nuchonalth tends to have short sentences with long words. This is a difference in the morphology of the two languages. Generally speaking, words in Nuchonalth are more complex than words in English. This is the study of morphology. Syntax is the study of the structure of sentences. Both English and Nuchonalth have a complex syntax. You might remember that on our very first day, I said that most English sentences can be broken down into a subject and a predicate. In Nuchonalth, most sentences can be broken down into a predicate, a mood ending, and participants. Understanding that will give you a very important understanding of the fundamental structure of Nuchonalth sentences. Last, the fourth important subfield of linguistics is semantics. Semantics is the study of language meaning. We will have almost nothing to say about semantics in this course. We will focus mainly on phonology, the study of speech sounds, morphology, the study of word structure, and syntax, the study of the structure of sentences. My hope is that after this course, you will have a basic understanding of these three areas: phonology, morphology, syntax, which will help you in whatever it is you are going to do with Nuchonalth language, whether it's learning, teaching, or something else. We've just had a question to repeat what I said about Nuchonalth syntax. I'm going to call up a visual aid and then repeat myself. I've just called up a diagram on the screen called a sentence structure model. This gives a very basic model of the structure of Nuchonalth sentences. What this tells us is that a sentence consists of a predicate, mood, and participants. You'll see that the participants are in brackets. That means that there are always participants, but often they're not said out loud. Like if it's understood who we're talking about, we don't have to say. So, for example, let's take the example sentence I used on Wednesday. I said, Mata ish tsihwatin i. The eagle is flying. Mata ish tsihwatin i. In this sentence, the predicate is mata, flying. The mood ending is ish. And the participant is tsihwatin i, the eagle. I can drop, if it's understood that we're talking about the eagle, I don't have to say tsihwatin i in Nuchonalth. I can just say mata ish. It's flying. Mata-ish. But I can't drop the predicate mata or the mood-ish. Both of those are required to make a complete sentence. That is a very brief summary of Nuchonalth sentence structure. There's a lot more to say. That's just where we are right now. Does that answer your question? The next thing on handout one are some other subfields of linguistics, such as phonetics, pragmatics, sociolinguistics, and so on. I'm not going to talk about these today. I do want to talk about a common misconception about linguists. A lot of people seem to think that linguists' job is to speak many languages. This is not, in fact, what linguists do. Linguists study the patterns in human languages. There are lots of linguists who speak many languages, but there are also just as many linguists who only speak one or two languages. Linguists' job is not to speak many languages. Rather, linguists' job is to understand something about the structure of language, to be able to analyze it. After this course, you will all be linguists. We're almost done talking about handout one for today. Let's take a look at a couple of the exercises and discuss them amongst ourselves. So I'm going to turn off the recording now, and only turn it back on if I have an interesting answer to something that someone brings up. Let's start with exercise three. Exercise three points out that different languages do not use all the same sounds. What sounds do Nunchaknoth and English share? What sounds are found only in one or the other? I'm speaking to the recording now. This is just to summarize the discussion we just had. I asked if we could think of sounds that English and Nunchaknoth share and sounds that only one or the other language has. Some sounds that both languages have include the short A sound, the long A sound, and the glottal stop. However, whereas we write the glottal stop in Nunchaknoth, we generally do not write glottal stop in English. So this is one of the challenges for English-speaking learners, to learn to write the glottal stop in Nunchaknoth. Then we heard some examples of sounds that are found only in one language or the other. The pharyngeal stop, ah, as in the Nunchaknoth word anus, heron, is used in Nunchaknoth, but not in English. Then we heard the example of the English word bird. Bird has three sounds that are used in English, but not in Nunchaknoth. B, D, and R. These are all English sounds that are not used at all in Nunchaknoth. So what we're doing is we're comparing the phonologies of the two languages, the sound systems. We see that each language uses sounds that the other one does not use, and at the same time, both languages use some of the same sounds. And that's as much as we'll say about that today. We're now moving on to handout two. Handout two is a very brief history of linguistics. The terms that are defined at the top of the handout include philology, which is the study of old languages, grammar, which is the study of the patterns in human language. We will be very interested in grammar. One of the main things that I want to do in this course is to help you get a better understanding of Nunchaknoth grammar. Linguists often compare prescriptive grammar to descriptive grammar. Prescriptive grammar tries to tell people the right way to talk or write. Descriptive grammar simply describes how people speak or write, but doesn't tell anyone how to do it. Linguists are very strongly descriptive grammarians. So linguists try to study a language and describe how do people actually write and talk. It is not linguists' job to tell people how they should write or talk. Now here's something very interesting. At least I find it very interesting. Grammar has been studied for a very long time. Grammar has been studied for as long as people have had writing. Writing was invented about 5,000 years ago in Mesopotamia and Egypt. Writing was developed later in China and in Central America. And for just about as long as people have known how to write, they have tried to tell each other the right way to speak and write. I'm sure you've experienced this in your own lifetime. When you were growing up, your parents and grandparents' generation told you how you should speak. They told you the right way to speak and the wrong way to speak, and that you should speak the right way. This is a very human thing to do. Why have people studied grammar? These are the main reasons that it seems people have studied grammar over the years. First of all, in order to tell people the right way to talk and speak and write. Second, to share laws, culture, and holy books. Someone might have some laws that they think are good, or a holy book that they think other people are interested in, and they need to understand the grammar of other languages in order to make it available to other people. It has also happened many times in human history that people who speak one language have tried to impose it on another people. They say, you should stop speaking your language and you should speak our language instead. I'm sure you all know that this happened in the recent past in Canada. I'm talking about the legacy of the residential schools and the Canadian policy of assimilation. There was a policy that Indigenous languages should stop being spoken and that everyone should start speaking English. And grammar has been studied in order to help people learn other languages. If you want to learn another language that is not your native language, you will need to understand something about its grammar. Now, I just glossed very quickly over a very important topic, the topic of assimilation and residential schools. We're not talking about that specifically right now. Rather, we're talking about the history of the study of grammar. But if anyone wants to say or ask anything about assimilation and residential schools, now's a good time. The study of grammar goes back at least 2,500 years. That's how long we can go back and find writings that people have left behind about how they studied grammar. It's almost certain that people studied grammar before that, it's just we don't have any records of it. I'm not going to go into much detail on handout two today. I'm going to skip over most of it, and I'm going to go straight to around the year 1900. So, for our purposes, we can think of the study of grammar before 1900 and the study of grammar after 1900. Around 1900 is when the science of linguistics began. Now, arguably, one of the most important events in the development of the study of linguistics from the study of grammar that had come before it was contact between Europe and North and South America. When European and Western scientists tried to learn and understand about American languages, that is, Native American or First Nations languages, they at first tried to use the models that had been developed for studying European languages, especially Latin. For many centuries, Latin was considered the most prestigious language in Europe. It was required study for anyone who wanted to get an education, and all languages tended to be compared to Latin. When Western scientists tried to understand about American languages, like New Channel, they tried to understand it in terms of the framework that they had used to study Latin and quickly found that it was inadequate. The languages of North and South America are significantly different from the languages of Europe and from Latin. And as a result, new models and new ideas were required in order to understand how these languages work. A couple of important figures in early linguistics are Ferdinand de Saussure, who was a French linguist, and Leonard Bloomfield, who was an American linguist. They both helped push the description and study and models that were used in linguistics in a way that would account for all human languages, not only the languages of Europe. I want to mention a few other linguists in connection specifically to New Channel. One is Franz Boas. Franz Boas was a German anthropologist and linguist, and he believed strongly that you could only understand a culture in terms of that culture's own language. He was very interested in the diversity of human cultures. He lived with people of various cultures, studied them, observed how they did things, what they believed. But he believed that these things could not be understood only in English or in German. One needed to find out how the people themselves explained what they did in their own language. One of Franz Boas's most important students, he had many, but one of the most important was Edward Sapir. Both Boas and Sapir studied Nuchanov around the year 1900, but Sapir did a lot more work. Sapir came to Port Alberni around 1910. He was looking for knowledgeable speakers of Nuchanov who could teach him about their language and culture. One of his most important informants was a man named Sayachapis. Sayachapis. Sayachapis is a Nuchanov name that means something like he stands high on the beach. His English name was Tom. He spoke only Nuchanov. We would say that he was monolingual. And Sapir interviewed Sayachapis, asking him about his culture, his stories, his language, his everyday activities. Sayachapis, or Tom, had a grandson named Alex, Alex Thomas. Alex Thomas was bilingual. He spoke both Nuchanov and English. He watched Edward Sapir, the linguist, as he wrote out the information he was getting from Alex's grandfather, Tom. And Alex had a knack for it. He understood the writing system. And so Edward and Alex started working together. Edward Sapir taught Alex Thomas the system he was using to write the language, and Alex helped him improve it because Alex knew the language. It was his native language. Furthermore, Alex spoke both Nuchanov and English, so he could talk about both languages in both languages. When we look at the oldest high-quality data information on your language, on the Nuchanov language, most of that information comes from Sayachapis, that old man, that Tsashat man who spoke only his language, Alex Thomas, his grandson, who spoke both languages, Nuchanov and English, and Edward Sapir, the English-speaking linguist. Edward Sapir was American, but English was not his native language either. Edward Sapir's native language was Yiddish. He grew up in Eastern Europe, and his family immigrated to the United States when Edward Sapir was a young boy. So this has been just a very brief introduction to these very important figures in early linguistics, especially the early study of the Nuchanov language. I mentioned Sayachapis, the monolingual Tsashat speaker, Alex Thomas, his grandson, who was bilingual, and Edward Sapir, the linguist, for whom English and Nuchanov were second languages. We will be coming back to all three of these men throughout the course. The study of linguistics and what we're concerned in this course is language, human language. Human language is a system of communication. Human language uses sounds, words, and rules for combining these to express an infinite number of meanings. We are not the only animals with communication systems, but human language is much more complex than the communication system of any other animal on this planet. We'll be using terms like native language and first language. This means the language that a person grows up with, the language that a person hears from birth or from a very young age. That's what we mean by native language or first language. This can be confusing because around here the word native can also mean First Nations. But when we say native language, we don't mean First Nations language. We mean first language. We will be using the terms indigenous and aboriginal to talk about languages like Nuchanov. What makes indigenous or aboriginal languages special is that they've been connected to a place for a very long time. That is, many generations of the same people have lived on that land, and the knowledge of that land works its way into the language. For example, Nuchanolth is very specific, very precise about whether some things happen indoors, outdoors, on the beach, on the rocks, on the water, or in a canoe. And that is because that is the local landscape. That is how people live. For thousands of years, Nuchanolth people have slept in a house, gone outside to the house, down to the beach, gone in a canoe, gone and done whatever they wanted to do. And that has worked its way into the language. That's why indigeneity, aboriginality are significant concepts for what we're talking about. We'll be talking about dialects. Most of the times when I've taught this course, we've had people from many different dialects joining the course. People from Cayucut, from Moachut, Ahadasit, Ahauzit, Ucluelet, Tsashat. Most of you are Tloquit or Ahauzit. So there's actually not less dialect diversity in this class than we usually have with Linguistics 181. Nevertheless, we will be interested in talking about dialects. You are probably aware that most of the materials available for learning and teaching Nuchanolth are in Barkly Sound dialects. And that's mainly because Port Alberni is the urban center of the West Coast. There are more people here, so naturally the dialects of this area, that is Tsashat and Hupachasat, get favored. You, I'm sure, are most interested in information on your own central dialects. But we will often be comparing central dialect information to Barkly Sound dialect information and to northern dialect information. Different dialects, we say, can be of the same language, but they're different versions of the same language. So central Nuchanolth, northern Nuchanolth, Barkly Sound Nuchanolth, they're the same language. A person who speaks central Nuchanolth can understand what a northern speaker or a Barkly Sound speaker is saying. They just sound different. I told you last week that I grew up in the United States. I speak an American dialect of English. I believe all of you grew up in Canada. You speak a Canadian variety of English. Our dialects are nearly identical, but there are some tiny differences. For example, I say tomorrow, you say tomorrow. I say about, you say about. These are very small differences. We call these dialect differences. The differences between Barkly Sound, Nuchanolth, Central Nuchanolth, Northern Nuchanolth, these differences are actually stronger, greater than the differences between Canadian English and American English. The reason is time. English has not been spoken in North America for very long. English has been spoken in North America for about 400 years. Nuchanolth has been spoken on this island for thousands of years. So Nuchanolth has had more time to develop different dialects than English has on this continent. Two more concepts from the terms part of handout three: language family and language area. A language family is a group of related languages. Your language belongs to the Wakashan language family. Other languages in the Wakashan family include Dititot, Makaw, and Kwakwala. These are different languages from Nuchanolth. Someone who speaks Nuchanolth can't necessarily understand Dititot or Kwakwala, but these languages have some similarities. Some similarities that they do not share with unrelated languages like English. We'll also be talking about a language area. A language area is a place where different languages are spoken, and these languages tend to share things even if they're unrelated. The Salish languages are unrelated to Wakashan languages. The closest Salish language to here is Hulkamitnam, which is spoken on the east coast of Vancouver Island in Nanaimo, Duncan, and Ladysmith. Hulkaminum is not related to Nunchaknoth. They are completely unrelated languages, but they share some similarities. For example, the barred lambda sound, kth, kth, as in klama, house post. This sound is found in both Nunchaknoth and in Hulkaminum, but it is not found in English. This is a sign of an aerial relationship. Hulkaminum and Nunchaknoth do not belong to the same language family, but they do belong to the same language area. There are seven language families amongst the indigenous languages of British Columbia. These are Algonquian, Haida, Kootenai, Na-Dene, Salishan, Tsimshianik, and Wakashan. As I said just a minute ago, Nunchaknoth belongs to the Wakashan family. The Wakashan family is the second smallest language family in British Columbia. The smallest is Kootenai. There's only one language in the Kootenai family, Ktunacha. Ktunacha is what linguists call a language isolate, meaning it's an isolated language that is unrelated to all other known languages. We don't know how long Ktunacha has been spoken in the place where it is spoken today, but as far as we can tell, it is not related to its linguistic neighbors. The Wakashan family is also small. It includes about seven languages. Those languages from south to north are Makah, Dtidot, Nunchaknoth, Kwakwala, Uwikila, Heiltsuk, Haisla. Haisla is the northernmost Wakashan language. Makah is the southernmost Wakashan language. Makah is also the only Wakashan language spoken in what is now the United States. All other Wakashan languages are spoken in what is now Canada. We'll do just a little bit of work in this handout comparing Nunchaknoth to some other Wakashan languages, to Dtidot and Kwakwala, but our focus will be Nunchaknoth. Let's take a brief look at Exercise 8. Exercise 8 gives some similar sentences in three local languages, Kwakwala, Dtidot, and Sinchathan. These are all languages of Vancouver Island. 2 and 4 give sentences for the mountains have snow on top. The Kwakwala sentence is Kwidzakwida na unge. Kwidzakwida na unge. The Dtidot sentence is Kwisqaasa duch ee badhaq. Kwisqaasa duch ee badhaq. We just heard Tom pronounce the Nunchaknoth version of that sentence, which is Kwisqayat ish nuchi. Kwisqayat ish nuchi. Let me ask you, what similarities and differences do you see? I've just told you that linguists think Nunchaknoth, Dtidot, and Kwakwala are related languages, that they belong to one language family. Do you see any similarities that might justify saying that? On the other hand, what differences do you see that make it clear that these are different languages? I'm going to summarize the conversation we just had. I asked you to compare the sentence that the mountains have snow on top in Nunchaknoth, Kwakwala, and Dtidot, and to look for similarities and differences. You notice that the word for snow is very similar in the three languages, kwis, or kwi. All three languages have a glottalized or hard K. Kwakwala, and on the other hand, Kwakwala and Dtidot have a D sound, but Nunchaknoth does not. And you also noticed that we use a special symbol when writing Kwakwala, which looks like an upside down E. That linguists call that schwa, and it makes the sound. That is an important sound in Kwakwala and in English, but it is not used in Nunchaknoth or Dtidot. These are some of the similarities and differences that we can find when comparing these languages. We're not going to have time in this class to really go into the question of whether Nuchanal, Tichidat, and Kwakula are related or not. So you're going to have to either take my word for it or remain agnostic about it. Our focus will be Nuchanal itself. Let's do one more exercise before we go. Let's take a look at exercise 9. Now we're comparing different dialects of Nuchanalth. We have here three sentences in four different dialects. The abbreviations Q, N, C, and B stand for Cayucachecklesset, Northern, Central, and Barkly Sound. Let's look at these sentences just in central dialect to begin with. The first is Ha yahakitsk no uyaksu. Ha yahakitsk no uyaksu. Now, when I first made this handout, most of my information came from Julia Lucas, who's an Ahouset dialect speaker. And I've since learned that colloquially it doesn't use this word, ha yahakitsk. Instead, you would say, Ha sukitsk no uyaksu. Is that right, Tom? So in a minute, I'll write out the colloquial versions of these sentences, and be aware that the central versions that I have here are based on my Ahouset information. So the Ahouset pronunciation of "there is your father" is ha yahakitsk no uyaksu. The next sentence is sleep well. Tlush im wa ich. Tlush im wa ich. And I don't understand you. We wick up sootish. We wick up sootish. So I've just written out the colloquial version of the sentence, there's your father. Ha suk itsk no uyaksu. Is that right, Tom? Now take a look at these 12 sentences. So we have three sentences in four different dialects. And we're going to do the same thing we just did when we were comparing three different languages. Before we were comparing Nuchanalth to Kwakwala to Ditidot. Now we're comparing different dialects of the same language. What similarities and differences do you see? First, I'll summarize for the recording what we just discussed. I asked you to look at these three sentences, there is your father, sleep well, and I don't understand you, in four different dialects, and talk about some of the similarities and differences. You pointed out the fact that only Barkly Sound has the ending mah in Wewikapamahsuwa, I don't understand you. Only Cayucot, I pointed out that only Cayucachecklesset has the word kukums, that means to not understand. And we looked at the endings for you in the first sentence. There is your father. So all dialects have an ending that's something like its, meaning you, but they're all pronounced a little bit differently. And something that sets the central dialects apart from the others is that in central dialects, the its that means you is followed by a k. So central dialects say it's k for you. It's k. Other dialects just say its. This is a small but noticeable difference, and it's one of the things that makes your dialect sound central as opposed to the other dialects. Here's my last question. Linguists would say that these dialects are related because at some point in the past, they all sounded exactly the same. There was only one version of Nuchanalth at some point in the past. I'm not asking you to accept that as right or wrong. Just assume for the moment that it's right. If that's true, if there used to be only one version of Nuchanalth, and then the different versions changed over time, that means that some of them are conservative in that they are more similar to how it used to be spoken, whereas others are innovative in that they're doing it a different way. So if that's true, let's take a look at the first difference that you pointed out. The fact that in the sentence, I don't understand you, The ending for I is s in most dialects, but it's mah in Barkley Sound. So, if all four of these dialects used to be the same, but then they changed, which ones are conservative and which ones are innovative? Is Barkley Sound the innovative one, or are Central, Northern, and Cayuga Chequoset the innovative ones? The main reason I showed you this example... Yes, Tom, do you want to say something? I was summarizing our discussion of these data from four New Channel dialects. We looked at some of the similarities and differences, and then I asked you to think about which ones might be older and which ones might be newer. Where the dialects are different, often we can say that one dialect does it the old way, that is, it's conservative, but another dialect does it a new way, that is, it is innovative. Really, though, you need a lot of information in order to decide between these two options, and you don't have enough information here to decide. So this is a speculative exercise. We won't come up with a final answer here. But I was driving towards the point that, based on the available evidence, it looks like the Barkley Sound ending mah, which means I, is an innovative ending. And one of the reasons why we can say that is that almost every other dialect uses s to mean I. Even Dtidot and Macaw, which are different languages but related to New Chonalf, use that s sound. So those are all pieces of evidence that point to the fact that the s ending is probably the older, the conservative ending, and the mah ending is probably the innovative or newer ending. This has been a brief overview of handouts 1 through 3. In handout 1, we talked about what linguistics is. In handout 2, we talked about a little bit about the history of linguistics. And I drew your attention to the year 1900 as a crucial time when the old studies of grammar and philology became something that we now call linguistics. And I told you about three important linguists who worked on New Chonalf, namely Syat Chapis, Alex Thomas, and Edward Sapir. And in handout 3, we looked at some of the language families of British Columbia, and we focused on the Wakashan languages. I asked you to accept that, because we are not able to look at all the evidence right now, but I ask you to accept for now that linguists believe that New Chonalf is a Wakashan language, that it is related to other Wakashan languages, including Dtidot, Macaw, and Kwakwala, and that when we compare related languages and related dialects, we can find similarities and differences, some of which are more conservative, some of which are more innovative. And that's all I have to say today. So unless you have some questions or further comments, we're just about done. Chooch.